Okay. Welcome to the Thursday Night Icebox. It's good to see you again. What are we really here for?
Good question.
What are we really here for? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. If you think about that, you will notice that you're here for a purpose. And as long as you think there's a purpose to your life, you get nowhere. As far as self-realization goes. Self-realization has no purpose whatsoever. Any purpose, any concept spoils it. Any preconceived idea, anything that is known, spoils it. There's nothing to be gained in coming here. What I mean is this. As long as you're looking for gain of some kind, the reverse will happen. When you realize that everything that you want, you already have, then something begins to shine inside of you. But as long as you believe you need something, or you have to gain something, then there's always a battle going on within yourself. People ask me and they tell me, that self-inquiry is too hard. I can't understand this because the easiest thing I can think of. But yet for some people it's too hard, so they say. It is written in all the books that self-inquiry is for the mature soul. Which means a person who's gone through all the teachings in past lives, pranayama, yoga, all these other things. And they've already experienced these things before. And now self-inquiry comes easy to them. But some people say, I can't seem to get anything out of self-inquiry. So my question to them is, then why were you attracted to this path? If you're attracted to this path, it means that you're ready for it. But the question I still get is, sometimes I'm not in the mood to practice. Sometimes I don't feel right when I practice. Is there anything I can do before to get me in the mood to practice? And the answer is yes. If you like, before you practice self-inquiry, you can pray to your favorite God. Whoever he or she may be. And when you become devotional, you'll want to practice self-inquiry also. So what is something you can do before self-inquiry? Well, let's see. You can take a statement such as, there is one life, and that life is consciousness, and that life is all there is, and that life is my life now. Think about that. There is one life, and that life is consciousness. That life is all there is, and that life is my life now. And you ask yourself, and what does this mean? See, you don't have to practice self-inquiry by asking, who am I all the time? You do not have to start that way at all. You can take something like we just said and inquire to yourself of its meaning. For instance, there's one life, and that life is consciousness. And you talk to yourself this way and say, well, this means there's nothing else that exists but consciousness. If only consciousness exists, where does love come from? Or harmony, or peace, or joy, or bliss? You think about that. And then the answer comes, why these verities must be synonymous with consciousness. In other words, consciousness is another term for bliss, or love, or joy, or peace. So if you have consciousness, you have the rest. And if that's all there is, that must be me now, not tomorrow, or the next day, or next week, but right now. I must be that consciousness. And the consciousness must be omnipresent, everywhere present at the same time. There's nothing else. This means I've got no problems. There's nothing wrong in the world. All is well. Because there's no other place for it to come from. Can you see? There's no place for troubles to come from. There's no place for disharmony. There's no place for evil. But then something inside you says, well, it exists. Look at man's inhumanity to man. Look at what's going on in the world, the homeless, the starving children of Ethiopia, and so forth. Disharmony does exist. If you're inquiring in the right way in yourself, something will ask you and come to you and say, yes, but to whom does it exist? This means it's not that you're trying to ignore these things, but you're coming from a different space. You see the world differently. You begin to realize that you are the self of all. The word self with a capital S does not mean you are yourself as an individual. When you experience the self, you are the self of all. You are the universe. You become all things. In other words, everything is taking place within you. Once you realize that you are the cause of everything in this world, something within you stops reacting. You stop reacting. You see what's going on, but you stop reacting because you become the self of all. In other words, you take the screen and its objects that are shown on the screen. You begin to understand that you are like the screen. And all of the things of this world, the good, the bad, and in between, are the objects on the screen. The screen is never affected by the object. No matter what the objects do that are shown, the screen is never affected. There may be pictures of Mazzy and Maddy on the screen, murderers, rapists, lovers, hypochondriacs, all kinds of people on the screen. But the screen is never affected. You become somewhat like the screen. You have a great compassion. A great love. But you're no longer affected by person, place, or thing. This does not mean you do not care. If you see somebody starving, it's you that's starving. Because it's all taking place within you. If somebody is hurting, it's you that's hurting, because it's taking place within yourself. You see everything as an outlet of your consciousness. But there's something within you that keeps you from reacting to things. Someone else says, somebody else asks, I can't wait to become self-realized because the world sucks. The world is terrible. I want to become realized so that I don't have to put up with the world. But there are people who are saying, I wish I could die so I can become self-realized and not have to deal with the world. And there are people that actually think that if you die, Well, if you're awakened, you'll be finished with the world. But, my friend, it's just in reverse. You see, everything is happening now. What this means is, whatever you think about the world now, you're going to think about the world after. It doesn't change. It's just like when you go to sleep. The last thing you think about when you go to sleep, you usually think about when you wake up. So if you're thinking about things that are evil all over the world, and then you happen to leave your body, you're simply going to take on another body and continue where you left off. Well, if you believe if you awaken, that'll be the end of it. You can't awaken until you feel harmony first. The last step before awakening is when you no longer react to life. And you begin to feel harmony everywhere, under all conditions and all circumstances. And then you awaken. But if you're feeling distraught and angry and upset and practicing to awaken, you'll never awaken. As long as you have those feelings. Those feelings have to go first. You have to harmonize yourself with the universe. You have to reconcile yourself with the whole universe. Starting with the mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, and the human kingdom. You have to develop feelings of love and compassion towards everything. In other words, devotion leads to yama. So the person is not a devotee to life. A person who has no compassion and no love cannot awaken. It's impossible. It's a prerequisite to awakening. And you have to develop these traits by yourself. Nobody can bring them to you. It's the same with satsang. People tell me they love to come to satsang because they get rid of the world for a while. They find peace with satsang. And the world's terrible. But I say to you that wherever you go in the world, that's satsang too. The dealings you have with people are satsang. Your reaction to person, place, or thing is satsang. Everything you do is satsang. The whole universe is satsang. Do not believe that only when you come here you have satsang. Everything is satsang. So to awaken, you have to let go of all your prejudices, all your preconceived ideas, all your concepts, and become totally free. And when that happens, people come to me and say, well, I've done all that already. And now I'm experiencing the void. I'm experiencing emptiness. So I must be self-realized. On the contrary, as long as there's somebody to experience the void, you can never become self-realized. The experiencer has to go. Nobody is left to tell about it. You have to go beyond the void. And what happens when you get beyond the void? You become yourself. You become yourself. Just the way you are. Your natural self. Words can't explain. People also believe that when you become the self, you become indifferent. Your rabbi don't give a damn attitude about anything. And of course, that's wrong. When you become yourself, you become loving, kind, peaceful. You automatically become in love with everything. You're no longer disturbed by the world or anything else. And you become radiantly happy. It seems strange how you can be happy when all of these dastardly things are going on in the world. But remember, they're going on within yourself, not outside yourself. And your false images, just like the images on the screen. The images on the screen appear to be real, don't they? But if you try to grab them, what happens? You grab the screen. They're like an optical illusion. So, the world is like that. It's like an optical illusion. It's not an optical illusion to the person who's not realized. In other words, as long as you believe you are the body-mind phenomenon, the world is real to you. And you have to take whatever action you have to take to make the world a better place in which to live. But when you have a semblance of realization, the world becomes an optical illusion. Just like the mirage in the desert. You see water in the desert and you think it's there. But upon close investigation, it's not there at all. So, the world appears to be real. And everything in it appears to be real. But upon a close investigation, you see it doesn't exist at all. But remember what I said. It exists to the Ayani, to the non-enlightened person. The world is very, very real. therefore do not walk around saying the world is false. For as long as you believe you're real, your body then is. To that extent is the world also real. But once you can feel that you are not the body, and that you are not the mind, then you're also not the world. Do not fool yourself. Do good works in the world. Help all you can. And when you do get self-reliant, then you'll know what you have to do at that time. So again, do not walk around telling people the world is unreal, it's only a dream. Because unless you can feel that your body is also a dream, and you know that it is, to that extent will the world be a dream. And when you wake up, again you will find that the whole universe is superimposed upon yourself, like an optical illusion. Any questions about that? Very important point. You don't.
I want to superimpose the world on myself.
You don't. You have nothing to do with it. It's just the way it appears.
Well, superimpose the appearance.
Yeah.
The seeming self.
It's all an appearance. It appears that way.
Why?
It's just one of those things.
I know it's one of those things. Why bother?
Luck of the draw.
Yeah. Why bother?
I can say that in reality it doesn't exist.
Yeah. You can say that.
I know, but you want to understand what I'm talking about when you say that you just said it does exist.
I don't say that.
But in reality, nothing exists. But for the sake of explaining things and talking, the universe is superimposed in consciousness.
And you are that consciousness.
You are that consciousness.
So it's superimposed on the whole you.
Yes. But in reality, it's not in real reality. So in real reality...
there's nothing there in the first place.
Exactly. So in real reality, we would keep silent. But since I have to sit here and talk like an idiot, we have to try to explain it somehow. And that's how we explain. But as far as I'm concerned, nothing exists.
If it doesn't exist, why do we need to help it?
Help it to what?
Why do we need to do good work?
You only do good work.
To correct what we see if we realize that it's not there.
Because you do not realize it's not there. If you really realized it wasn't there, you wouldn't ask the question.
If one realizes that, or I should say, is it so that suffering exists in the mind of the sufferer?
Suffering exists in the mind of the unenlightened person. So the one who's suffering believes they're suffering, the one who watches believes they're suffering. The one that feeling is taken away. And illumination comes.
If the observer appears or imagines that he is at peace about someone else's suffering, is it because they feel that the suffering person has made the choice to suffer?
No. As long as you imagine, you will always see suffering. And as long as you see suffering, you should do it to help and to do good for people. and help them get out of it. That's your duty. As long as you believe you're a human being. But as soon as you realize that you're not a human being, but you're consciousness, the whole story changes completely. So it's kind of different.
Believing one is consciousness and knowing one is consciousness.
Becoming. Not believing, not knowing, but becoming. When you become something else completely. And when you use words to try to understand and try to explain, you can't. Because the finite can never comprehend the infinite. So you have to become that yourself in order to know what's going on. But in the interim, you have to help suffering humanity all you can to address the problem. And to relieve the suffering of people. Of course they are.
When you're unenlightened, that's what's going on.
Very much so. In reality, nobody suffers. But when you're not seeing reality, there's terrible suffering going on.
Mm-hmm. It's like the experience changes more than the rules per se.
You can say that, yes. You just see it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Everything becomes different.
When Jesus said, I believe, I don't know the Bible, when someone said something awful to him, he said, what is that to do with you?
Well, that's a very high statement. That's a very high statement he made. He's right. But that's in a higher sense. If the person is realized, then what does that have to do with you? But if the person is not realized, then it's his duty to help and to alleviate it. There are two ways to look at this, of course. If Jesus was working with his disciples, who knows what he was teaching them? So maybe he didn't want that particular person to go out to the world and become worldly. He probably wanted him to stay close to him with Jesus. So he said, don't worry about the world, your job is with me. Get him on God's plan. There are different ways to look at these interpretations of Jesus.
In the earlier part of what you said, you mentioned what are our attitudes toward things, et cetera, how we see the world. You kept using examples. And in order to be free, is it necessary to give up all your preferences? I mean, I could use some examples. I would much rather prefer to be in a different sort of environment, you know, where there's more trees and plants and things like that, for several reasons.
Yeah.
And is it necessary to give those feelings up, in a sense?
You can change your environment, but your reaction to them has to be given up. It doesn't matter where you go in life. But as long as you see something wrong or something that's bad in one place compared to another place, it's keeping you back from final realization.
What about the example of, say, how pollution affects my body and things like that? I mean, that's the kinds of things I have to deal with.
Well, that means that you believe you still have a body. And as long as you believe you've got a body, you've got to take care of it. And you're right. But when you finally see that you don't have a body, you're not a body in the mind, then it doesn't matter where you live.
Would it be sort of like just giving up the feeling of providing for yourself in a certain sense and just letting, kind of letting go and letting God.
Again, what happens is this. When we're no longer the body knows what to do all by itself. Even better than when you take care of it. So your body will do the right thing, irrespective of what you believe. If you stop interfering with it, it knows how to take care of itself. But if you think you've got to interfere with it, then you'll pick places to live. You'll go here, you'll go there, you'll buy certain things to take care of yourself. There's all kinds of things to take care of your body. But when you realize, I am not the body, I am the self, then the body will do what it came to do. Karmically, your body knows what it has to do. And you can't stop it no matter how you try. So the best thing to do is say, not my will, but thine. And stop trying to make something happen. Everything will happen all by itself.
Moving to the dealership.
Yes. Becoming a non-doer. As long as you believe I am the doer, you've got a problem. Because you'll always be the doer. And you'll always try to improve or correct your life. With no avail. But as soon as you know I am not the doer, everything starts to happen like it's supposed to, and you're happy.
Does that include, or is it exclusive of a feeling of apathy? In my case, I find myself more apathetic toward things like making money and you know, different things that I used to care about, and sometimes I care that I don't care anymore. I have a sort of a feeling of apathy toward the world. It seems, in a certain sense, you know, it seems more beautiful in one way, and yet at the same sense, things that were important at one time, like careers and jobs and all that, just seem to be, can't even find a handle on where they went.
It depends on your karma as a body. I'm sure you've read the story of King Janaka, the old Indian saint who was self-realized, and he had to rule the kingdom, and did a lot of work. Your body will do what it came here to do. It has no apathy, no resentment, and no love for itself. But if your body is supposed to become a herb doctor as well, if it's supposed to become a nurse as well, if it's supposed to do no work, it will do no work. It has nothing to do with you. But you will be happy. You will always be blissful and happy. That your body will do whatever it came here to do. So if your body is suffering a little, it will not affect you. You will not be affected. For instance, say you became enlightened, and then you're arrested for a crime you didn't commit. You wind up in jail for 10 years. That's your body going through its karma. It has absolutely nothing to do with you. And you'll be the happiest inmate that ever existed. Really. So it doesn't mean when you become enlightened, your body doesn't go through anything. It just doesn't disturb you, for you're not it. And it's a hard one to comprehend. Because you say, I'm looking at your body and I see it. But who sees? You're seeing a misinterpretation. Because the body doesn't exist at all like you think it does. So we should stop worrying about it. And get on with our life. This is strong tea, Henry.
Mm-hmm. didn't take the bag out of the competition. I left it up to you.
I am not the doer.
I said, Robert, the bag's here. You take it out as long as you like it.
What kind of tea is that?
It's orange pecan.
That's good.
Ordinary.
Robert said he's not the doer, so it's your fault.
I'm not the doer either. You take it out for
him. He's the doer.
Not your own. Okay, but you're the doer. Take it out at your peril.
See, even that. God answered them, it was all pure then. As strange as it may seem, it was all pure then.
By what, Robert?
By what?
Yes. Or by whom, Robert?
By the self.
Is the self occupied the front of the tea bag?
All these things are meant to happen before.
This blade of grass.
Everything is pure then.
Robert, that was an interesting question with the self out. I talked to myself with the TMA. I had a few friends that I'd invited to meet you over the last month or two, and one of the questions that seemed to be very disturbing for them was the idea, and it's an interesting question of purpose, like, is there one important thing that a body is here to do, for example, you know, it was a real fascinating question for me to kind of throw around. That sort of little question reminded me of that. Like, is there any big things or little things in the eyes of the self?
No, there's not.
So,
and it has no purpose. But karmically, these little things are all going on. In reality, they do not exist. But karmically, they appear to go on. Karmically, everything is pure than. When realization comes, the whole story changes. There's no coming, there's no going.
It wipes out karma.
It wipes out everything.
Well, there's nothing there to have karma.
So as long as we think we're the body-mind phenomena, then fear of the nation exists. And calm exists, and reincarnation exists, and God exists, and all the rest exists.
Alan Watts. Day, and he's talking about how we pride ourselves in having free will. If we think about it, the body is going on, most of its functions are going on without a conscious control. And then even the thought of moving my finger, where does that thought come from? Who made that decision to move that finger? We don't know. We can't make it.
Well, it's karmic.
Yeah.
Everything is karmic. But see, the difficult part is to comprehend this, that in reality it doesn't exist. That's the hard part to comprehend. And of course, it may appear like I'm moving my finger, but I know I'm not.
Nothing so whatever is occurring.
Nothing is occurring. There's only consciousness, and that's all there is.
Some people say that's a cop-out.
Of course they do, but who says that?
I don't know.
He's telling you you're coughing out.
Is the phenomenon, my hand, is that different from consciousness, or are they the same?
Everything is consciousness, but the appearance is different.
The appearance there is not consciousness.
Yeah. As long as you believe you're the body mind, then it's real. But it's still consciousness. Going back to the screen again, you draw a picture of a hand on the screen. It's meaningless to the screen. What's important to the hand?
This spoon. Does that exist or doesn't exist?
It exists as long as you believe you're the body. When you know the body that doesn't exist.
what's the nature of its existence when you don't believe it exists anymore? I mean, it's an appearance.
It's consciousness.
No, that's just a word, but what...
Explain your question.
This is different from this, whether you're enlightened or not enlightened. I mean, the teacup that you're drinking out of is used to drink, and this tea, you know, this is for the tea bag, and this is the function. The functions of images have different... For Christ's sake, stop laughing. I'm trying to make a fucking point. I'm trying to get this serious. Now, how are they different, or how are they the same?
They appear to be different because... And if you try to grab these things on the screen, you grab the screen. The same thing is happening. The beliefs are dividing the mind. But once they transcend that, everything becomes different. But you can't see it right now because you're in control of the dividing the mind. You're involved in the dividing the mind. So everything appears separate.
The screen and the images on the screen, in your analogy, are not different.
They're the same. It's all the screen. The images don't really exist. So as long as we believe we're alive as a body, everything becomes real to us, the whole world, the whole universe. And I admit, it's a difficult subject to comprehend. This is why we have to do the work and experience it for ourselves. Otherwise, like I always say, you should not believe me. Why should you accept what I say? You have to find out for yourself.
Sometimes that experience is described as effulgence everywhere. They don't see form at any time. There's no form anymore. It's all consciousness, and they perceive it that way, and they don't even perceive form. But that isn't maintained all the time throughout their whole life. Otherwise, I mean, maybe it is for some people, but otherwise they couldn't even see if there was a human being in front of them or not.
No, it doesn't work like that. Consciousness perceives the images, but it realizes they're not real. That's it. Whereas if you're not consciousness, you perceive the images and you believe they're real.
Does consciousness instigate the images?
No.
What brings them about?
They don't exist at all.
Well, what brings the non-existing images about?
Nothing. They don't exist, they never exist, and they will exist.
Are you a yogi?
They don't really appear.
Who are you talking to?
Robert, are you a yogi? Have you attained realization?
Who knows what I am? There's nobody left to tell.
Then you perceive this to be a form?
I perceive that as being an object, but not a material object. I perceive that as being consciousness.
So what is
but I see it as an object.
What is the difference between a state that others perceive a human being to be in where they don't even observe form? They observe consciousness in such a unity that they don't even see a table or a person.
If they didn't, they wouldn't be in their body. As long as you have your body left, you
but
see
you're not
forms.
In your body.
But you think I am.
I know, but the same with them.
But how do you know what they say?
I don't.
So why are you saying that?
Because it seems that when people come down from such an experience, that's what they relate to other people. Somehow they
you're speaking of nirvikalpa samadhi.
Well, I don't know what I want to call it. I realize you have a certain view on what nirvikalpa samadhi means, and I don't mean that. I don't want
when you close your eyes and you shut everything out, then you see nothing. But as long as you're functioning in the world, you've got to see images to function. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in your body.
There are instances of people that I've heard personally from people where their eyes were open.
How would they survive?
I don't know. But I know that when they come down, supposedly, down from such a quote experience, that they perceive more.
No, realization doesn't come down. And it doesn't go up.
Then what is that? Where
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're saying. Okay. If a person saw nothing, he would never get out of bed. He would be dead.
But just for temper, or allegedly, people
that have
this experience, but
temporarily you can go into samadhi, subconsciousness, sure.
And then come back.
As
opposed
to without
dying.
Eyes open.
Yes, that can happen.
So,
but it's not self realization.
What is it?
It's a high state of consciousness.
What if their so-called come down from only seeing the bulges everywhere, and their come down, supposedly to enough to see form, was the same as your outlook?
It doesn't happen that way.
Why wouldn't it happen that way?
When somebody goes into samadhi, they lose the world. They lose consciousness.
We're talking about with the eyes open.
With the eyes open and closed. But once they get up, they have to experience the world again.
But what if they're standing up on it?
They'll fall down. Because they're not seeing anything. They're not feeling anything. They have to sit down and lie down.
I don't know why that would occur. But
because they're not seeing the world. Like you say, they're just seeing consciousness. Because they can't function. They can't walk. They can't do anything. The body becomes totally immobile. But Sahaja Samadhi is total realization all the time and being aware all the time.
So constantly. I guess the implication is that some of these people, when they attain that Samadhi, when they come down, then they're not in realization anymore.
But there's no such a thing as being in realization and coming down out of realization. Again,
the subtlety I'm talking about is coming out of some space of seeing, instead of only seeing the fullness of consciousness, but coming out of a state of also seeing the form of consciousness.
You're talking about a high state of realization, but not total realization. Total realization, you see forms as consciousness.
But my question is, what if those people also saw that?
Then it'd be self-realized.
Right. And yet at times, before, after, during, that all they saw was effulgence. Form even.
As long as you see effulgence and as long as you see form, somebody has to be the seer. And if somebody's left to be the seer, you're not self-realized. As long as the seer exists.
So as long as I've ever heard a story from someone, then they weren't totally
realized. Exactly. Because they can tell the story, they can relate it.
Mm-hmm. Yet you have been able to relate stories about things.
Sure, because I'm talking to you.
So couldn't that be their state as well?
But you're speaking of a state that they're experiencing. Look what you're talking about. That's different. They can talk to you about things, but they've got to be able to see forms to do so. Can they talk to you while they're seeing nothing?
No.
So of course not. To be able to talk to a group of people, you've got to see forms.
Okay, but that's not the question. The question is, why is there that difference even to begin with? How can they see just a fortress?
Because they've meditated for years. In meditation, you begin to see effulgence all the time while you're in meditation. But then you've got to come out of it and you become an ordinary person.
And yet can still perceive everything as consciousness and be totally self-realized.
if you're totally self-realized, you do not have to meditate to see effulgence, because you're in that state all the time.
Right.
If you have to meditate, you're not self-realized. So the person you're talking about is not self-realized.
What is being self-realized? What is it anyway?
Being awake.
That's just a synonym.
Exactly. It's being awake. Awake to reality. Awake to yourself.
It sort of seems like we're all in this big 3D movie, and we all sort of believe it. And you're sort of saying this is just a movie we're watching.
That's right.
Or we're all caught in a dream. You're saying we believe all these images that are flipping around, but you're, you can say we're just caught up in that.
Well, put it this way. Take the analogy of the screen, the images. I'm aware of the screen 24 hours a day. Well, most people are aware of the images 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only difference.
They've taken the images as
people. Yes.
Is that what Rahana said when he said the fundamental surety note that he noticed after his experience? You know, the I was always there, like the, he said, like the fundamental surety note. He never could lose that after that first experience. When
exactly, that's right.
So you're always aware of the presence of the fundamental I, and no matter what appears in front of it, that
doesn't
obscure it or doesn't take the attention away from it.
Indeed.
You know, when you're talking to Jay, too, you mentioned something, but I could think of it in terms of whenever the scene appears, you know, S-C-E-N, there's a seer. They come together. There's no... So if something is appearing, it has to be appearing to someone. It's like we sort of take it as two separate things, but the reality of seeing is that if there's a seer, there's a scene, and vice versa. They're just really the same thing.
And when you notice that if someone tells a story, that is, they experience that.
Well, you can tell a story, but we're talking about their own personal experience.
If someone sees something, they exist as a seer, and so they identify with that.
Yes.
So
if they're
Robert sees form.
As consciousness.
Yeah.
You see the fundamental eye. Well, the
yeah, my question is very subtle. It's taken for granted that someone self-realized, and as you say, you see form as consciousness, they also see form as consciousness, but sometimes, who knows how or why, they don't even see form as consciousness because it turns into effulgence as consciousness.
Well, effulgence, the void, visions, all are projections of the mind. Consciousness is beyond the effulgence.
Okay.
So you're speaking as if effulgence is the final state.
Yeah, right.
Effulgence is not the final state.
So the final state is seeing these forms as consciousness.
Exactly.
That's the final state.
Yes. The final state is being consciousness itself. And realize that all this is the self and I am that.
Is that the state you're in?
Who knows?
Who knows? That's a cop out.
What can I say?
Give me a straight answer.
I've got no idea.
But you are aware that what you fundamentally are is always existing.
Yes.
Are you unbrokenly aware of the screen only?
24 hours a day.
But also the images that appear.
I see the images that are not reality, but they're consciousness. I see you as the screen.
Oh, great. You're seeing correctly. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm glad you really see me.
If you saw all of us that way strong enough, maybe all of us would see the enlightenment.
Well, that's what satsang is all about. That's what's supposed to happen, but you're so immersed in nonsense that you keep yourself back. See, as long as you have feelings of anger, feelings of indifference, feelings of I don't care, feelings of being hurt, separation, it keeps you back. But if you come in here with an open heart, then all these things will happen later.
All these forms, there's no
I see individuals, but I see them all as one screen.
So the illusion rover is actually the perception?
Yes, and your perception. That's correct.
If there is no such perception, there is no illusion, it's all consciousness.
It's all consciousness, that's right.
But isn't the illusion also a product of consciousness?
The illusion is a product of consciousness, but it's not consciousness itself. It appears as consciousness.
Yeah.
It's an appearance.
Yeah. But it too is consciousness.
Everything is consciousness.
Mm.
The illusion never existed, never will exist, but it appears to exist.
Mm.
Only consciousness.
This is the way consciousness appears to bamboozle itself. Mm-hmm.
It appears that way.
Maya.
Yes, those are Mayas.
Yeah.
But consciousness is absolute reality.
Huh. Well, it likes to entertain itself.
No.
What's it up to?
Nothing. You're up to something.
I'll go on. You were seen clearly just a moment ago. Now you're confused.
No.
He saw the write-up that the actor sitting in that chair is Henry Bevenfeld.
Robert, if someone is in the state that Jay is talking about, who slipped in and out of samadhi, you said that's a high level of consciousness, but not total realization. Is that a necessary step in the progress towards realization, or does everyone go through that?
No.
So you can instantly awaken?
Yes.
Or you might go that path, leave in and out.
You don't have to go that path at all.
But you did call it a high state.
It's a higher state than normal state, of course.
Did you go that path?
No.
You were straight to the point.
Yes.
Good for you. My congratulations.
Thank you. I never asked for anything.
You said when you wanted a candy bar, answers to questions on tests.
Right.
Look what trouble it got you into.
That's why you went to the Mahatma Maharshi.
I went because I wanted to see what's going on. What was up to?
What was he up to?
Nothing.
Is it worth going to find that out? You already knew it.
It was a pleasure to be finding out.
Being up to nothing is good.
It's wonderful. As long as you believe you're something, then you suffer accordingly. Because you're part of the world. But when you know you know a thing, there's nobody there to suffer.
Well, the greatest statement of the evening.
I'm laughing because you forgot to ask to whom does it appeal. I'm laughing.
You expect me to say that to you? Yes. Everything is spirit
leading. Yeah, that's true.
That's why you should never react. It's your reaction that gets you back.
There are no exceptions to that. So
no exceptions.
When you say everything is spirit leading,
everything.
flat.
So stop complaining.
Yeah, is it preordained or what?
Is it preordained by our consciousness causing the state of our particular?
It's preordained by your unenlightenment.
So
if
it's not preordained for you, then it's not
common for everybody. For me, there's nobody left to feel anything.
But you noticed it at the beginning.
Of course, I mean, I still notice it. It's really like I do with it.
Well, the same that you notice these forms,
you asked it.
Yes, they would.
So, how can you tell us not to react when I'm destined to react?
Remember, the only freedom you've got, can you remember what it is?
To awaken.
What's the only freedom you've got?
To awaken.
No, not to react. Not to react.
To be the witness of the tendency to react. That kills the reaction.
Yes. That's the only freedom we've got. Not to react to any situation. And to go within. And find the self.
But wouldn't your reacting or not reacting be a matter of predestination?
Yes. But you still have the choice.
I can see the point of not reacting to everything. But what if you like
dancing? Go ahead.
That's reacting to
your body mind, yes. So you have to suffer the consequences
of dancing.
Of dancing, it means that you meet somebody, get married, have children.
Twist your ankle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just feeling it's a wonderful life.
Good, enjoy.
But that's still reacting.
So don't react. That's up to you. You have the choice to do whatever you want. As far as it goes. React or don't react, that's your choice.
Who is the chooser?
You are.
In other words, consciousness is the
chooser. Everything is consciousness.
There's all these
See, we're talking at different levels. Or we're mixing all levels up. Everything is consciousness. And nobody chooses. That's the ultimate. When we talk about karma, then it appears that you choose.
Consciousness as identified with the body-mind is making it appearing to choose.
No. Consciousness is not identified with anything. Because
it appears to be identified.
Appears, yes. That's a better word. Consciousness is self-contained pure awareness.
Well, that's the ultimate.
Yeah, so it does nothing.
Can you speak of absolute consciousness and relative consciousness to clarify?
No, we can't do that either. Because relative consciousness doesn't exist.
Just a term, just a word. Just try to think what can't be thought.
So why think at all?
Well, that's a good point.
That's the whole object, to quiet your mind. To quieter your mind becomes, the more self-realized you become.
That's the greatest stuff we can do for the world.
Yes. Yes. That's like an electric fan. And you shut off the power in the fan, but the plate still keeps turning until it wears out. So with yonis, they may have a body that's gone through some experience until it stops and wears out and you drop it.
That's all sort of bodies, subtle bodies, and everything. like Nirvana is relative, still existing as
Nirvana appeared to have cancer.
Right. He appeared to disappear and gone.
But to whom did he appear to have cancer too?
Right.
To the Ayani. So that example, Mary, is for the person to not be like me. Who sees?
The Prabhupada Kama will have to run his course willy-nilly, enlightened or not enlightened.
That's how it appears to the Ayani. You're right.
But the Ayani...
Nothing
is finished.
It's finished. But for the sake of explanation, you use examples like the electric fan. You pull out the plug, it still goes around to the steps.
Or the word for the karma.
Hmm?
Or the word for the karma.
Yes.
If anything is appearing, then first I can make the assumption that the seer is also appearing, or the ego is appearing, and then I can inquire into who is that. Is that correct? As long as the world appears, the seer is also appearing.
Yes.
To see that.
But first you have to inquire who sees the world.
Right. So that was my question, that if the world appears, that someone is seeing it, and then I can ask who sees it.
To whom does this appearance come?
Right.
Sure.
And to remember that is really the freedom, and to forget it is to fall back into being the character that's victimized by the whole thing.
Indeed. But I always want to remind you to make it all very simple. It's not really complicated. Just turn within and ask the question, to whom does this come? The world, in other words. To whom does it appear? It appears to me. Hold on to the me. The me is an appearance. And follow the me to this culmination, to the source, to its substratum. And then you will realize that the me never existed. There is no me. No pun intended.
The me is sort of slippery. It's not easy to hold on to. You can hold on to it briefly, but to hold on to it all the way to its disappearance. It's so easy.
Yeah. You hold on to it mentally.
Mm-hmm.
To the me. You watch it, in other words. You watch the me.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch it going deeper, deeper within yourself. Deeper, deeper within yourself. Until the day comes when you get to the bottom of it. When you get to the source of me. And the source of me means there never was a me.
Gets burnt up in consciousness.
And you become I am. I am is consciousness.
So you can start anywhere, really, as soon as there's an appearance.
Exactly.
Those can all be reminders, and everything can be a reminder.
Yes. So you don't have to start and ask, who am I? Whenever you feel pain of any kind, mental anguish, anger, catch yourself immediately and ask, to whom does it come? Who feels this? I do? Who am I? Where did the I come from that feels this pain? And don't answer, just wait. Hold on to the I. But focus on the answer. Focus on the source. then one day the I will disappear and the I am will take its place. You'll be free.
The whole
ball of wax. That's it. There's nothing else. Now just being in the silence makes things happen. Being in the silence is not meditation. We're not meditating on anything. We just watch, we observe, we're alert. Watch what's going on in your mind when you're quiet. Meditation is when you have something to meditate on, like Krishna or Rama or God or Buddha. But self-inquiry is when you watch, when you observe, when you're alert. And you watch what your mind is doing. Whatever it brings up, you find, you grab hold of it and you say, to whom does this come? And follow all the way through. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Remember, what you perceive in each other is determined by your samskaras, by your past tendencies and your past nekka. In other words, what I mean, when you all look at me, everyone has a different opinion, a different perception. Now the perception is not good and not bad. It's all determined by where you're coming from. It's all mental, in other words. It's really not real. It's a projection of your own mind. And this is always true when you see something wrong or something right. They're just mental impressions. That's why you should not react to anything. Because it's all coming out of you. In other words, whatever you see is yourself. So if you become angry or if you don't like somebody or something is wrong someplace in your life, you're simply seeing a projection of yourself. Because there's only the self. It behooves you, therefore, to develop a consciousness of love and peace through everything. And then you will have the right projection. And it's just a small thing. About anything. Anything at all.
Thanks.